good morning, everybody. My name is Nina Thomas. It's my privilege to be up here today. Very excited to be here. Very excited to be part of this series this summer called Summer on the Mount. We've based that on the Sermon on the Mount, which is the longest sermon that we have recorded that Jesus did on a mount about 2,000 years ago. And it's become a very famous sermon. And Joel, when he opened up this series, said, if Jesus titled this sermon, he would have titled it, "This is what it means to follow me. This is what it is really like to be a Christ follower." And as we've been seeing, and as we'll see today, the sermon that Jesus gave is a convicting and confronting sermon. It is not something that is just some of the verses, even I don't even know if you'd put on your walls. They're so convicting and confronting. It's where the rubber meets the road. It's where you find out, okay, if I say I'm a Christ follower, am I really doing the things that he says a Christ follower would do? Today, we're learning one thing specifically that a Christ follower is and does. A Christ follower treasures heavenly things more than earthly things. A Christ follower treasures heavenly things more than earthly things. And so today, for the next 30 minutes, we're going to be talking about heavenly treasure versus earthly treasure. We're going to be talking about money. We're going to be talking about possessions. We're going to be talking about what captivates our heart, what we live for. So we're going to read a portion of the Sermon on the Mount, and then I'm going to share three treasure principles from that section, and then we're going to talk about how these things affect our life. And then I'm going to ask us some kind of probing questions to try to see what is it that is our treasure. Are we truly treasuring heavenly things as a Christ follower, or are we treasuring earthly things? And I want to say one thing before we read the section, and that is that, like I said, this sermon is convicting and confronting, and it is our natural inclination when we get uncomfortable to try to alleviate that uncomfortability in some way. We want to get rid of it. We don't like feeling uncomfortable. We don't like being convicted, right? We don't like being shown a picture or a mirror and say, here's what you're doing if it's not the right thing, right? We want to avoid it. And I just want to encourage all of us to not do that today and not do that throughout the whole sermon, to embrace being convicted. That's part of being a Christ. Convicted. I'll share a story. 2 weeks ago, Jared's my husband, we were on a road trip and we were fighting the entire day, just about everything and about everything under the sun. As I'm sure if you're married, maybe you've experienced this as well. You're not on the same page, you're fighting. Well, Jared looks at me and he said, "Did you know that you are literally picking a fight with everything I've said?" And my natural inclination, of course, was to prove him right and say, "No, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that." But I knew I was. And I think that's why it hurt to hear it. It was convicting to me, where I realized I was picking a fight. I was mad and I was taking it out on him, and I was, picking a fight. It's natural to want to avoid that, to try to make excuses for that, to try to reason my way out of the fact that I was doing that. It was really hard for me to swallow my pride and apologize. But you know what? A Christ follower is humble. A Christ follower should be willing to say, "You're right. I was doing that, and I'm going to change." Because being convicted and allowing that conviction to penetrate will actually lead to change. We don't change unless we're convicted. We just don't, right? We think we're fine. We're going to go about our day doing whatever we want. But when that conviction happens, we want to embrace that and let that make a change in our life. Jesus' words are convicting. So I just wanted to say that maybe you feel a little convicted today on this section. I want you to embrace that. And see if maybe it helps to make a change. This section, for me personally, has convicted me. It's convicted me as I've been preparing. It continues to, I'm sure it will till the day I die, convict me. And I hope that helps me to make changes that are good in the right direction, right? So let's read this section in Matthew 6, verses 19 through 24. It says, "Don't store up treasures here on earth where moths eat them and rust destroys them, and where thieves break in and steal. Store your treasures in heaven, where moths and rust cannot destroy, and thieves do not break in and steal. Wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will also be. Your eye is like a lamp that provides light for your body. When your eye is healthy, your whole body is filled with light. But when your eye is unhealthy, your whole body is filled with darkness. And if the light you have is actually darkness, how deep that darkness is. No one can serve two masters, for you will hate one and love the other. You will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and be enslaved to money. Jesus tells us here to store our treasure in heaven. And negatively, don't store your treasures on the earth. Where you store your treasure is where you're storing your heart. And then here's this very black and white dichotomy here. You can't serve two masters. You cannot serve God and be enslaved to money. And I know my natural inclination is to assume that I am not enslaved to money. We want to believe that we don't treasure these earthly things as much. We want to believe that, yeah, we might have stuff that we treasure, but we're also completely devoted to God. We want to believe that. But Jesus is telling us here that we can't. We cannot do both of those things. And this isn't a challenge, okay? Jesus isn't challenging us here like, I bet you can't. I bet you can't do both. And then we say, yeah, I can. No, we can't do both. About 9 years ago, I was in Atlanta with my husband's family, and my husband has two older brothers, and when they're all together, everything is a challenge, right? Everything is like, oh, I bet you can't, like, stuff 40 carrots in your mouth, you know, and talk at the same time. And of course, the next person goes, well, yeah, I can. So it's just a challenge, back and forth, back and forth. Well, we were at this park, and they were challenging each other back and forth and coming up with their own challenges. My brother-in-law was like, hey, I can totally jump over that picnic table. And so he decided to go ahead and try, and he did. He was successful. He jumped over that picnic table. There he is. And so they continued to go back and forth, like, hey, I bet you can't do that. I bet you can't do that. I bet you I can hang over this river on a tree branch and still and not fall in the water. So here he is trying that, right? He's trying that again. Well, then my other brother-in-law says, you know what? He saw this wooden platform that he wanted to jump over onto a stone structure. Now, the distance was pretty far, right? All of us were like, don't do it. You won't make it. Don't even try it. He was like, no, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. No, he didn't say that. But no, he was like, no, I could do it. You know, I could do this. Everyone tried to reason with him. Please don't. You're going to hurt yourself. Don't do it. Well, he did it. He failed, actually. Look at him. He smashed up against the stone structure. He didn't make it. We were right. We said you weren't going to make it, and you didn't make it. I thought of this as, you know, God is not challenging us here like, hey, why don't you try to live for this world and pursue money and possessions and have all that and be devoted to me? You can't do it. There are laws fixed in the universe. He cannot jump over that and survive, right? No, he did survive. But he couldn't make it. That was a law fixed in the universe, gravity. Distance, your body can't jump that far. Whatever it is, it's a law, right? There is a law that we have that we cannot serve God and money at the same time. That is a law that is fixed in the universe. Matthew 6:24, again, it says, no one can serve two masters, for you will hate one and love the other. You will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and be enslaved to money. There are three great treasure principles in this section that we read about treasure. And in order to not plagiarize, I'm going to say that I got some of this information from Paul David Tripp. If you've ever listened to him, he has some great sermons on Matthew 6, and particularly about possessions, about money. But I really gleaned some of my understanding of this section. It really helped me solidify what this means. There are three major treasure principles that we get. One, everybody lives for some kind of treasure. Everybody lives for some kind of treasure. Number two, the thing that you treasure controls your heart. And three, what controls your heart controls your behavior. Everyone lives for some kind of treasure. We are value-oriented. We are value-driven. We assign value to things. So even if that thing doesn't have an inherent value, we assign value, right? A dollar is not worth a dollar in materials, right? That's not a dollar worth of paper and ink. It is a dollar because we say it's a dollar. We've assigned it value. We assign value to things. And this value system that we have is a little bit individual. It might be, you know, what you choose individually to value. But I will say in the broader spectrum in America, one of the value systems we have is the more money something costs, the more it's worth. If you have a car that's worth $10,000 versus a car that's worth $50,000, that's $50 car, $50,000 car is more valuable. It's worth more. You treasure it more, right? That's the kind of system that we have here in America. But we do. We assign these values. When Jared and I first got married, we had these old crappy couches. And I mean crappy. Like, they were in my grandparents' basement. They weren't like their nice living room couches. They were the basement couches, right? The ones nobody else wanted. Those were our couches. We had them in our living room, and it would be like we would eat on them, drink coffee on them, and I would just spill things and not feel like I should go clean it up, right? They were just that gross that you're like, it's fine. You know, it'll dry. But when we finally decided, okay, it's time for us to purchase, you know, like new couches, oh my gosh, we went into the store, we got to pick out that fabric, and it was this whole thing, pick out the color, we got the pillows, and then we bought things like stain guard, things like how to make it, you know, protect it, things that I would never have even thought of before because the couches I had just were completely worthless. Right, these couches now had more value. I treated them differently. They were worth more to me, and I valued them differently. That's, you know, a silly example of how we are with assigned value of things. And it doesn't have to be money. It can be anything. It can be maybe a treasure to you is being liked. So social media is a great place for that, right? The more likes you get on a picture, maybe that makes you feel good. That's something that you treasure, is that people say, hey, I like that picture of you. You look good in that picture. And that makes you feel good. That's something you treasure. Maybe it's pleasure. You know, maybe it's just, I want to experience all these things in life, like the foods and, traveling and whatever it is. Like, maybe that's what it is that you value. But the point is, everybody has something they value, and everybody lives for that thing that they value. Maybe a good test, and we'll go through this more, but maybe a good test is to say, what do you spend your most time, your thoughts, your energy, and your money on? That's probably what you treasure the most. And then we get into the second point, which is the thing that you treasure controls your heart, your innermost being, your heart, your thoughts, where everything happens. What you treasure controls that. So you are the happiest when you're the closest to that treasure. So if money and possessions is something that we treasure, and I think in America, unfortunately, if you're not American, then you have your own problems. But in America, we have this thing where we treasure these things, this money. So when you have less of it, you become more unhappy, more frustrated, more disappointed in your life because you have less, right? Because that's things that you value. You would feel, if you value likes on your social media, as going back to that, then if you posted a picture and only two people liked it, you'd probably be really unhappy, right? You'd be like, oh, nobody liked my picture, you know? Whatever it is that you value, you're the happiest or the unhappiest as you get closer or further away from that thing that you treasure. And what controls your heart controls your behavior. What you treasure, once that treasure becomes what you value, it goes into your heart and then it starts to control you. It sets the agenda for your words, your decisions, your actions, what you do, where you go, what job you take, what car you buy, who you hang out with is determined by what you treasure. It controls your behavior. Proverbs 4:23 says, guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life. When I was growing up, I heard a really popular phrase that said to follow your heart. Now, think about that. What you treasure controls your heart. So if you're following it, whatever it's telling you to do, if you're treasuring money and possessions, that's your life now. You're following that. That has become your life. A long time ago, I bought this bag that I had. I bought it in New York. It really wasn't worth a whole lot, but I bought it in New York City. It was really special to me. I valued it a lot. I took it everywhere I went, and I took it on vacation, and for some reason, I jumped out of the car to take a picture, and I took the bag with me, and I left it, like, in the middle of the road, and it was gone. And the rest of the day, I was extremely disappointed. Again, another story about me mad in the car with my husband. But anyways, I was upset that I left this bag, and then I was like starting to blame him. Like, well, if you should have noticed it. I mean, I had it. Why didn't you notice it? That thing that I valued, as I got, you know, less away from it, it wasn't with me anymore. It started to control my behavior, right? I started to act differently, started to treat people differently. What you value, what you treasure, controls how you feel, how you interact, what you do, where you go. It controls you. So the question really is, what is it that you treasure? What is your treasure? Because that is what you're living for. That's what's controlling your life. And in this section, we learn, Jesus breaks it down into two kinds of categories. We might have 50 categories for treasure. Jesus just has the two. So here we go. We got two. Earthly, which by nature is temporary. It's deteriorating. It doesn't last. Money, possessions, the praise of others, pleasures. Those things go away, right? Nobody's enjoying pleasure 24/7, right? It's a passing, it's fleeting, it goes away, and then it's gone. That moment is gone. They do not last. And then there's the heavenly treasures, which by nature are eternal. They don't perish. It's a risk-free, sound investment, right? It's something that's going to be there for the test of time. It's heavenly. And I would love it if we could all state that we all treasure heavenly things more than earthly things, right? We would love to be able to state that. Of course I value heavenly. Of course I value God more than I value these things. I don't know that we can be so quick to make that statement. None of us want to freely admit this, but we have to ask ourselves, really, how much do we treasure the things of heaven? How much truly do we value, do we dedicate ourselves to the things of heaven? I've been reading some statistics on, this is just American churches and their giving, how much they give to churches. And I read this statistic that I thought was kind of interesting this week. It said, the average giving by adults who attend U.S. Protestant churches is about $17 a week. And, you know, the dollar amount really isn't that important. God doesn't give us a formula for how much we have to give, but I just wanted to break this down as like an average American Joe, okay? So let's say average American Joe is giving $17 a week. Average American Joe, in general, the average income in America is $56,000. So average Joe is giving about 1.5% of his income. This is a chart of 100 blocks. This is average Joe giving 1.5%. As a Christ follower, we value heavenly things, right? Would you, just based on this chart, what would be your conclusion that average Joe values more? Earthly things or heavenly things? I also read a statistic that said that they give double, right? So 3%. Average Joe might be giving 3%. Now does that, again, that's double what it was last. Does that look like average Joe values heavenly things or earthly things? Just based on these. And I want to state one thing. If you, and this is I've talked to Joel about, if you feel like you're here and you don't feel like you're behind the mission of this church, you don't trust the leadership here, you don't feel right about giving money to this church, from Joel Traynor, he says, please find somewhere else to go because you can find somewhere that you can get behind the mission and you can support the leadership. And that way you can give because we'd be robbing you of the joy and the freedom that there is from giving. There's a joy and there's a freedom in pursuing heavenly things. So if this place isn't it for you, that is fine, but find somewhere where you can get behind the mission and you can give. Because giving generously is what a Christ follower does. And as I mentioned before, like the lifestyle of treasuring earthly things, it's a lifestyle of not being content. It's a lifestyle of hoarding more and more things. Just ask yourself, and I won't ask for a show of hands, but do any of you have anything in your house that you don't need? Why do we do this? We collect things. We hoard things. We have things in our house that we don't need. I'll use myself as an example again. I one time came home with a dress that I bought, was excited, showed Jared. I was like, look at this cute dress I bought. And he goes, don't you have that dress? I was like, no. it's brand new. I clearly don't have it. Well, we went up in the closet. It was funny because it was ridiculous. And we went in the closet and pulled out a dress. And sure enough, it looked pretty much exactly like the one I bought. And I was like, well, it has a different neckline. So it's not the same. Point being, I didn't need that. I just bought it. This is what the lifestyle is of accumulating things, of just collecting things and just filling our house with stuff. And the point isn't stuff is bad necessarily. The point is, what do we treasure the most? There's someone in our church named Maya Williams, and I love this. He said this many times, and I love it. He says, it's okay to have stuff. It's not okay for stuff to have you. And that's such a good point. It's okay to have stuff. It's not okay for the stuff to have you. Are you aware of how much you're accumulating and why? Are you aware of where your resources are going, what you're spending your time, your money, everything on? Are you aware of which kingdom those things serve? Could it be possible that we're treasuring the things of earth more than the things of